we've looked at society, and society is really the people. Culture goes deeper, and it analyzes what are our values? What is it that a society likes? And there could be different likes or different values in every society, and those are different cultures or subcultures or co-cultures. So today we're going to talk about culture. Now, what sociologists like to do is they like to talk about nature and nurture. And when they do that, what they're referring to is something like this. The simplest way to think about culture is to think about the distinction between nature, our biology, genetics, and nurture, our environment, surroundings that also shape our identities. Because our biology is genetics, we have a particular form. Because our biology and genetics, we have a particular form and we have certain abilities. But our biological nature does not exclusively determine who we are. For that, we need culture. Culture is the non-biological and social aspect of human life. Basically, anything that is learned by humans is part of culture. So things we learn are part of culture. Therefore, culture is more than our biology. But our biological nature does not exclusively determine who we are. For that, we need culture. Culture is the non-biological or social aspect of human life. Basically, anything that is learned by humans is a part of culture. So then, what is culture? Culture includes norms, values, beliefs, or expressive symbols. Roughly, norms are the way people behave in a given society. Values are what they hold dear. Beliefs are how they think the universe operates. And expressed symbols are representation, often representations of social norms, values, and beliefs themselves. So this encompasses what culture is. Now, connected closely to culture is language. In fact, social theorists such as Michael Fawcett, Peter Berger and Thomas Luckman, Irving Goffman, and George Herbert Mead have long noted that language lies at the root of all human culture. Since language is never static and relies upon continued use for its existence, culture is thus continuously negotiated and thus may remain relatively stable and change rapidly in relation to the ongoing linguistic negotiations and developments within groups, organizations, institutions, and society. Now, I find it interesting that we read in Genesis 11, 6 to 9 about language and one culture and how they connect. Listen to this. Yahweh said, "Behold, they are one people, and they have all one language, and this is what they begin to do." Now, the context of Genesis 11 is it's after the flood, and people are populating, they're hanging out together, and at some point in the power of one language, that old sinful nature was raising its ugly head again. And now what was happening is the people were thinking to themselves, maybe we ought to build a tower, and the tower will go to the heavens, and the tower will build a testimony to humanity. And the power of the language connected to the culture was of such that they could communicate so clearly what they thought and what they felt. So it was as if the language and culture of humanity, and remember too that those on the boat, on the ark, some of them were still alive when this was happening. The children of Noah and so forth, and because they were still living really, really long. It was the generations after that, the years are now being shortened. So they're here all together, all speaking one language, and their culture is so unified, they become so powerful, that Yahweh said, "Behold, they are as one people, and they have all one language." And this is what they began to do and build that tower. "Nothing will be withheld from them, which they intend to do. Come, let us go down and there confuse their language, that they may not understand one another's speech." So Yahweh scattered them abroad from there on the surface of all the earth. They stopped building the city. This is that city with that great tower. Therefore, the name of it was called Babel, because Yahweh confused the language of all the earth there. From there, Yahweh scattered them abroad on the surface of the entire earth. Notice when the languages were separated and changed, the powerful, unified culture was broken down. It was as if God shortened the lives of humanity in Genesis chapter 6, and the flood, and by grace the lives were shortened. At that point it was said to be 120 years. And then after the flood, the people come together with one culture. Now he's shortening the power, or limiting the power of the culture, by separating the languages. It's so incredible how these are all connected together. So, having said that, let's talk about some of the misconceptions that people have about culture. Many people think today of culture in the way it was thought of in Europe during the 18th and 19th centuries. The concept of culture reflected inequalities within European society and the colonies around them, or colonies around the world. This understanding of culture equates culture with civilization and contrasts both with nature or non-civilization. So in other words, the European Western culture is civilized, and the African culture, for instance, are not cultured, they're native. And again, you see the colonial bias here. Some sociologists in history have tried to point out what is the best culture. So theorists like Michael Arnold believe that culture is simply that which is created by the best that has been thought and said in the world. Anything that doesn't fit this category is labeled as chaos or anarchy. From this perspective, culture is closely tied to civilization, which is the progressive refinement of human behavior. Again, it's somewhat of getting to a utopia. What is the best culture? And let's make the best culture. The common use of the word culture: in practice, culture refers to elite goods and activities such as haute cuisine, high fashion, or haute couture, museum caliber art, and classical music. The word cultured refers to people who knew about and took part in these activities. For example, someone who used culture in this sense might argue that classical music is more refined than music by the working class people, such as jazz or the indigenous music translations of Aboriginal peoples. But the fact is, culture is defined by each society. By the late 19th century, anthropologists had changed the concept of culture to include a wide variety of societies, ultimately resulting in the concept of culture outlined above: objects, symbols, the meanings given to objects and symbols, the norms, the values, and the beliefs that pervade social life. Now, having said all that, the early modernists would look at things in much more a scientific description and try to describe before they prescribe. But even in this whole time, how quickly seeds of something else came about, and that's the seeds of cultural relativism. And we see that in the study of sociology. And this is very much postmodern. So by the time the postmodern thinkers came along, This new perspective has also removed the evaluative elements of the concept of culture and instead proposes distinctions rather than rankings between different cultures. See, the modernists would actually go to logical syllogisms that would, you know, based upon reason, and that there was best culture based upon these reasons. But by the time the postmodernists came, and this is really the more and more the thinking today, is that there's not one culture better than the other culture. There's just distinctions. For instance, the high culture of the elites is now contrasted with the popular or pop culture. In this sense, high culture no longer refers to the idea of being cultured, as all people are cultured. High culture simply refers to the objects, symbols, norms, values, and beliefs of a particular group of people. Popular culture does the same. So what starts happening is people groups have a culture within themselves, and depending upon the people group you're with is how you would see culture. And one people group is no better than the other people group, so you can't say that the elite culture is high culture and the popular people group culture is lower culture. Each culture lives side by side. And this is partially connected to cultural relativism. What happens then is a reinterpretation of evolution. Attentive to the theory of evolution, anthropologists assume that all human beings are equally evolved, and the fact that all humans have culture must in some way be a result of human evolution. They are also wary of using biological evolution to explain the difference between specific cultures, an approach that either was a form of or a legitimatized form of racism. Anthropologists believe biological evolution produced an inclusive notion of culture, a concept that anthropologists could apply equally to non-literate and literate societies or to nomadic and sedentary societies. Now, it's fascinating how evolution here, you know, looks at things the way they do. Because it once was upon a time, not long ago, that the evolutionists in sociology talked about how culture was evolving into other things. We're going to talk about in this class how Adolf Hitler used sociology and connected it to evolution and a lot of the sociological terms and justified the racism of putting to death 6 million Jews. Today, the new spin is that culture, the evolving of cultures and people creating culture, is part of the evolving process, and all the differences only show that humans have evolved so far. But notice, too, the biblical account of culture is already that culture is there, that humans are image bearers of God, and that before their languages were separated, the power of that culture was such that it would create a powerful, powerful force. So to say that humans are evolving, therefore culture evolves through these individual people groups, is a new spin of evolution. The fact is evolution doesn't really have much to do or say about the development of culture other than trying to connect evolution and the theories of Darwin, theories without God, and trying to incorporate them into a sociological spin, a sociological tie-in. And it's nice and handy to be able to say that evolution has now seen the light, and it has people groups evolving where they need to be, and it's all okay in this evolving. So it's a reinterpretation of evolution. Evolution's perspective dominant view. They argue that through the course of the revolution, human beings evolved the universal human capacity to classify experiences, encode and communicate them symbolically. Since these symbolic systems were learned and taught, they began to develop independently of biological evolution. In other words, one human being can learn a belief, value, or way of doing something from another, even if they are not biologically related. That this capacity for symbolic thinking and social learning is a product of human evolution confounds older arguments about nature versus nurture. Thus, Cliff Geertz argued that human physiology and neurology developed in conjunction with the first cultural activities, and Middleton concluded that human instincts were culturally formed. Again, we see how people just cannot get away from trying to explain the world without having God and the image bearers that God created part of it. So in reaction to some of the modernist understanding of sociology and evolution and other modernist view, now what's happening is that what's being said is, hey, you know, humans have this capacity, and it's an evolving capacity for cultural awareness. Then out of that diversity, which is now this new evolved human trait, comes unique cultures. This view of culture argues that people living apart from one another developed unique cultures. However, elements of different cultures can easily spread from one group to another. Culture is dynamic and can be taught and learned, making it potentially rapid form of adaptation to changes in physical conditions. Anthropologists now view culture as not only as a product of biological evolution, but as a supplement to it. It can be seen as the main means of human adaptation to the natural world. So basically, what's happening now is a new form of cultural relativism based upon humans in their autonomy and their ability to adapt and be unique and diverse. Human differences make cultural differences. This view of culture as symbolic system with adaptive function, which varies from place to place, led anthropologists to conceive of different cultures as defined by distinct patterns or structures of enduring, although arbitrary, conventional sets of meanings which take concrete form in a variety of artifacts such as myths, rituals, tools, design of housing, and planning of villages. Anthropologists thus distinguish between material culture and symbolic culture, not only because each reflects different kinds of human activity, but also because they constitute different kinds of data that require different methodologies to study. Now, what's being said here is, again, it's going down the trail of people evolve, and we evolve in such different ways, this is what's being said, and that different values evolve, and different societies go in all different directions. And that is that ability to create all this diversity of culture with different materials and symbols and all that is now how evolution has made humanity to adapt and to change over time. So then what comes out of this whole thing is a cultural relativism. This view of culture, which came to dominate anthropology between World War I and World War II, implies that each culture was bound and had to be understood as a whole and on its own terms. The result of this belief is a cultural relativism, which suggests there are no better or worse cultures, just different cultures. Now, when we talk about this, we have to know that there's levels of abstraction in this discussion. Another element of culture that is important for a clear understanding of the concept is a level of abstraction. Culture ranges from concrete cultural objects, that is the understanding of work of art, to micro-level intrapersonal interactions, that is the socialization of a child by his or her parents or guardians, to a macro-level influence on entire societies. It is important when trying to understand the concept of culture to keep in mind that the concept can have multiple levels of meaning, and each of these levels may continuously act upon one another in complex ways. What's being said here is that even the smallest aspect of cultural impact can all of a sudden influence another micro level or a macro level. So you'll have there could be a cultural event or a cultural phenomenon. There can be one person. I'll give an example. When Adolf Hitler proposed his understanding of sociology and convinced a small party of his beliefs, it changed, for a while at least, the German culture, or at least the controlling German culture's view of racism, which then had a micro and macro influence on the entire state, which eventually created war, World War II. So while we can talk about these levels of abstraction, whether it be a cultural object, a micro level abstraction, or a macro level abstraction, they all can influence each other in powerful ways. So keeping all this in mind, understand that there's a certain artificiality of cultural categorization. One of the more important points to understand about culture is that it is an artificial categorization of elements of social life, as Griswold puts it. There's no such thing as culture or society out there in the real world. There are only people who work, joke, raise children, love, think, worship, fight, and behave in a wide variety of ways. To speak of culture as one thing and society as another is to make an analytical distinction between two different aspects of human experience. One way to think of the distinction is that culture designates the expressive aspects of human existence, whereas society designates the relational, often practical aspects. Again, the society and culture are very changed, but as he calls it, the expressive, that the values, the things that people really hold important, become almost like the sub-motivators of a society is often the culture. Now, within cultures, there are subcultures. A subculture is a culture shared and actively participated in by a minority of people within a broader culture. A culture often contains numerous subcultures. Subcultures incorporate large parts of the broader culture of which they are a part, but in specifics may differ radically. Some subcultures achieve such a status that they acquire a name of their own. Examples of subcultures can be bikers, and they have the whole Harley Davis thing, or military culture, where people will have a certain way that the military training has connected them, or Star Trek fans, Trekkers or Trekkies. These are examples of subcultures. In many ways, they share many of the things that the rest of a culture might share, but then there's the highly important, expressive, emotional piece of their lives. You know, again, I just can think of all kinds of them, like, you know, people who reenact the Revolutionary War or the Civil War. It's like they become into this subculture, and that subculture almost feels real to them, or people who do video games, gamers, etc. Then there's counterculture. A counterculture is a subculture with the addition of some of its beliefs, values, or norms, where it challenges or even contradicts those in the main culture of which it is a part. Examples of this in the United States could include the hippie movement of the 1960s. To some extent, the green movement was very countercultural, and also polygamous is a very obvious example, where you have marriage defined between two people, and then now polygamous are not even legal in most and almost every United States states. But in some places, like Africa, polygamy might not be counterculture. It's one of the cultural options. Maybe it would be a subculture, but it would not be countercultural. Then you have ethnic centrism. It is the tendency to look at the world primarily from the perspective of one's own culture. Many claim that ethnocentrism occurs in every society. Ironically, ethnocentrism may be something that all cultures have in common. You know, I think this is often missed out upon in the news media. Often people forget that each person's on a team, and for some reason that's how we live. You know, you're on your team. If your culture is American culture, you somehow think that America values, you know, are better, you know, almost like a culture and nationalism. Or in America, where I live, we have all sorts of immigrants. So there'll be different teams. It's almost fun. Like, I come from Dutch background, so I'm a Dutch American. There's Italian Americans, there's Irish Americans. And each of these cultures have a different piece to them. So it's fascinating how we, like, joke with each other about some of those cultural differences. So we all share sort of the being American, but then we also have those differences in some of our ethnic thinking, and those things form that ethnocentrism. So essentially then, what is culture? Let's start summing this up. So what is culture? Understand most simply as a way of life of a particular society, culture entails a variety of aspects that include but not limited to norms, values, beliefs, expressed symbols. Consequently, culture can encompass anything that provides meaning and can be given meaning among a group of people. As illustrated at the beginning of the chapter, there may be different meanings attached to the same object or symbol depending upon the culture at hand. The cow, which can be found across the globe, is an edifying illustration of this point. Each culture has its own interpretation of what a cow is and means. In the U.S., we most often see a cow as something to eat in our daily life, or a cow brings milk. But in India, many cows are seen as something to be revered in spiritual life. Again, one side of the globe, the culture interprets a cow one way, and another, based upon religious understandings, would base a cow a different way. So you see in all of these things how culture can work. I believe culture in evangelism cannot be understated. When we talk with people, there's different cultures. And a lot of times what missionaries did is missionaries would take their Western culture and they would go to another land and they would believe that their culture was, you know, more holy and better, and God loved their culture, and all their scientific advancements in Christianity were melded together. So missionaries would go to other places and just take their specific culture and superimpose it. And because many of these colonial powers were more powerful than these unique countries and these other places that they were going to. In other words, they had more powerful weapons. They had more advanced science. So what they would do is they would take their culture from, let's say, Europe or the United States, and they would impose it upon the uniquenesses of the cultures in other places. Now, on one level, you can understand why this would happen. But on another level, there were unintended consequences that occurred. Some of these unintended consequences now have created so much pain in the world, where the societies, their own intrinsic way in which the cultures would live and grow, became replaced by aspects of the Western culture. But then in the process, things did not completely work out that way. So what happened is you'd have a bifurcation, culture splitting, people's identity changing. You would have, even though some positives from the Western culture, it would also kill out some of the positives in the unique culture. So in this process, culture, though we cannot clearly see what it is in all ways, the fact is that we have to be very self-aware of the culture we live in and be respectful. You know, one thing at Christian Leaders Institute is we want to give something Western culture can give, that is a Western education. But we want to be very careful that we do not take away the uniquenesses of cultures in other sides of the world. We're interested in the God of the Bible, the biblical culture, because we believe in every culture, in every people, there is a need for reconciliation to God and revival. But what we do not want to do is we don't want to take and marry American, Western, modern or postmodern values and then attach it to the training at Christian Leaders Institute. We want the training of Christian Leaders Institute to stay within the biblical culture and how the biblical culture can change our own culture and change every culture. But being very careful to respect those things that are indigenous in cultures that must remain in the unique indigenous cultures. And then those things that are related to sin that affects all of us. So those are the difficult questions and the difficult things to do in sociology. So we ask these kinds of questions, well, what about Christian culture? Well, we find from the Bible that Christian culture is a transforming culture. Romans 12, verse 2, do not conform any longer to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will. The pattern of how Christianity spread was to spread inside out. It was not to go from the top down to change culture. It was from the inside out. So how someone thought of themselves, how someone thought of a man and a woman and all that, those things are defined in the Bible. And from an inside-out perspective, these things are brought and they're communicated through people living in the church, engaging in their society, being part of where they are and what they're doing, and society changes, and the kingdom of God is advanced. So we see, you know, what about Christian culture? In a lot of ways, I believe it comes down to this. The world will find you very engaging, and when you're engaging, what happens is something pretty powerful occurs. You are engaged in your culture and they see your life and almost a holy jealousy develops. And this jealousy is so powerful and people want what you have. And when they get to know you and they see, you know, that there's something crazy attractive about you, they want to more and more copy what you have. Here's what this slide said. The world finds you attractive to copy and incorporate in the general culture. In other words, who you are and how you believe. 1 Peter 2:12, live such good lives among the pagans so that though they accuse you of doing wrong, they may see your good deeds, and glorify God on the day he visits us. So, for Christians, we're those who live our lives in such a way that people see that the culture of heaven is real in our lives. That new life is real. That joy, peace, patience, kindness, forgiveness, all of these things are real. In cultures around the world, these are things that cultures struggle with. In every single culture, there's bitterness. And in every single culture, the forgiveness of Christ and the healing of God to, you know, we have this kind of a passage. How can we love God who we have not seen if we cannot love our neighbor who we have seen. So a distinctiveness of the transforming culture of Christianity is forgiveness. How many times should we forgive our neighbor? 70 times. No, 70 times 7. In many cultures of the world, when someone hurts another person, it's a revenge culture. But in Christianity, when we are hurt, we forgive. So now we live this out internally, and we're happier people. We're set free. We're not trying to justify ourselves, blame others, crucify others, because Christ was crucified once for all for us. Christ was blamed once for all for us. Christ is the Savior. We're not the Saviors. Now, that is a powerful distinctive of transforming Christianity that comes through with individuals who are reborn, who practice Christianity. It's so powerful. It changes society. It changes culture around us. But again, we have to be careful to understand this, that Christianity's intent was not to come up with utopian culture. It was to rescue fallen image bearers from the death and wrath that they deserve being part of a fallen human race. So we are so freed and so changed, and we live it. Our family sees that we live it. Society sees that we live it, and we actually are part of changing culture itself. So this is amazing to think about, that really the culture of the divine gets spread and sown into every culture as Christians live out the new life in Jesus Christ.